Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. How did Dallas's Fair Park become the place we know and love today? The State Fair of Texas opens its 2010 season on Friday and traces its roots back to 1886, when city leaders bought 80 acres of land east of Dallas in order to set up an exposition. Since then, Fair Park has more than tripled in size and seen majestic structures built and world-class art installed, most notably for the Texas Centennial Celebration in 1936. Willis Cecil Winters is Assistant Director of the Dallas Parks and Recreation Department and Director of the ongoing Fair Park Revitalization Project. He details the history of the park's stewardship in his new book, Fair Park. Willis, welcome back to Think.
Thank you, Chris. It's a real pleasure to be here.
You link the State Fair to the emergence of Dallas as a sort of cultural and agricultural center in North Texas, but that recognition didn't happen accidentally. We fought for it.
That's exactly right. All the cities in North Texas back in the 1860s, 70s, and 80s were competing with each other. They were more or less on equal footing. Dallas received two railroads in 1872, so that sort of set it ahead of everyone else. But then the State Fair came in the mid-80s, and there were other agricultural fairs, county fairs throughout the region. State Fair sort of got its footing in 1886, and that was just one more in a series of events and occurrences that allowed Dallas to gradually emerge from this miasma of North Texas towns, agricultural and farm communities, and become the preeminent commercial agricultural city of the region.
What was on the site before the fairgrounds were purchased?
It was, as I say in my book, cotton fields that stretched to the horizon. No trees, the Texas tracks of the Texas Central Railroad, absolutely nothing but blue sky and horizon.
So what made East Dallas the right place for that?
Probably because the land was cheap. Mm-hmm. The founders of the what was then called the Texas State Fair and Dallas Exposition, you know, were looking for cheap land that would be easy to develop, also land that was on a railroad track, so it was adjacent to the tracks, and they were able to find 70 to 80 acres at a reasonable cost. Within a reasonable distance of downtown Dallas, it could be reached by horse-drawn, mule-drawn trolleys.
I was interested that in 1886 there were actually, you mentioned competing county fairs, there were two things that sort of called themselves state fairs, and then they decided the next season they'd be better off together.
That's right. In 1885, and throughout, you know, after the Civil War, there were a series of county fairs, but in 1885 there were two competing fairs that claimed to be the state fair for the state. That one was in North Dallas, then what was then called North Dallas, which is roughly where Cole Park is today. And if you look at the old subdivision maps, it's called Cole's Fairland Edition. So there was a fair there, and then another fair at Fair Park, and they were competing interests. One was farm implement dealers, one was more farmers, ranchers, livestock. And they both did surprisingly well in 1885, but they saw the folly of having these two competing events, and so joined forces and renamed the fair in 1886 in 1887 for the second year at its current site.
These days, and far back into the early 20th century, we think of the automobile companies as being big exhibitors. I was delighted by the photograph that you include of a wagon manufacturer with wagons stacked in a pyramid like 10 high.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine the state fair without automobiles and vehicles in general. But, yeah, there was a period up until, you know, the teens when, you know, the first car didn't arrive in Dallas until, you know, 1906 or something like that. So before that, wagons was the major mode of transportation. And so all of the wagon and buggy dealers from around the middle section of the United States, the one that was with the photograph in the book was based in St. Louis, but they all had dealers in Dallas, and they exhibited. It's very important. This was an agricultural fair in the 19th century and well into the 20th century. So farm implement dealers, buggies, and wagons were the major exhibitors at the fair in those days.
Do you happen to know, Willis, if they had giveaways? You know, these days you get a keychain if you see the Ford people.
Yeah, I'm certain that they did. Nothing has changed much over the years, so I feel certain that they had promotions like that back around the turn of the century.
Another really fascinating element is the fact that initially the fair made the bulk of its money from horse racing and betting.
That was probably the single largest source of revenue for the early state fair from 1886 until horse betting or betting at tracks was made illegal by the state legislature in 1903. So for what about a 17-year period, that was a major source of revenue for the state fair. 1903, it was not legal, and so the state fair was thrown into a financial calamity by losing its principal source of revenue. Also, 2 years prior, its major exhibition building burned to the ground. So there was a real problem, major financial struggles for the state fair in the 1902-1903 period. So they had to come up with other ways to use the racetrack at the fairgrounds, but still to attract people, hopefully to pay admission to watch. You know, they had other types of races, buggy races. They had military drills on the fairgrounds. They had aeroplane demonstrations and exhibitions. And all of these people were traveling the fair circuit back then. So-and-so with his aeroplane show would come into town for the state fair, and they would be staged out of the old racetrack at Fair Park.
It's funny to think what a draw that must have been to see an aeroplane, the open, double-winged things that we think of when we think about the Wright brothers.
Exactly. You know, it's probably the first time that most people that lived in Dallas, they probably saw their first airplane or biplane at the state fair at Fair Park.
One other thing that you include in the book that I really liked was it's a sort of a reproduction of some kind of document that had the names of the fair board members on it. And what's great is the names on that list are Munger and Sanger and Keast and all these places that now have, you know, subdivisions named after them and streets. I guess being on the board of the State Fair of Texas, back then the Texas State Fair, was always reserved for the most prominent people?
That's exactly right. If you look at the list of presidents of the board and the board members from that era, it was the preeminent businessmen of the city, the leaders of the city and the political leaders. So a lot of the street names, as you said, subdivision names and parks in Dallas today, their origins can be found with this early group of state fair board members.
So how far in advance of the 1936 centennial did the city of Dallas start thinking seriously about wanting to be the representative of this celebration?
Well, in general, the idea of the centennial was first suggested at a state advertising convention in Corsicana in 1922. So that idea germinated almost 14 years before the centennial. It was probably, you know, dispersed around the state and certainly to the political leaders in Austin. So, but the real effort in Dallas probably didn't start until the early 1930s. The State Board of Control for the Centennial Commission advertised for cities to stage the central exposition probably in about 32 or 33. And so that's when the real effort began, and that's when people like all the great bankers in Dallas from the 1930s, people like R.L. Thornton, speaking of street names, and Fred Florence and Nathan Adams came together and formed the core group that would put together or assemble Dallas's centennial bid, and then worked with a young architect who had just moved to Dallas in 1926 by the name of George Dahl. And Dahl and R.L. Thornton were the two primary players that shepherded Dallas's bid through all of the state commissions, the Board of Control, and were successfully secured the centennial exposition for Dallas.
And this was no small thing at the height of the Great Depression, and obviously this part of the country was very much impacted, to raise $25 million?
That's an incredible feat. I don't know what $25 million escalated to today's cost would be, but it would be a phenomenal amount of money. And for back then, Dallas was probably in the early 1930s, probably was around 260,000 people. So be a city like the size of Arlington, putting together a massive bid. It was the Olympic Games of its day, and going after this event. And so George Dahl had his incredible series of seductive renderings of conjectural renderings of the centennial of what this World's Fair would look like, of which none of it was actually built or transposed to reality.
And he didn't call it eye candy. What's the phrase that he used?
He called it eyewash.
Eyewash.
I've also seen the term hogwash used, but I've in his memoirs or in his verbal interviews, he's used the word eyewash. He termed these renderings eyewash.
Willis Winters is my guest. He is Assistant Director of the Dallas Parks and Recreation Department and Director of Ongoing Fair Park Revitalization. He's also the author of the new book, Fair Park. You can join our conversation by calling 1-800-933-5372, or you can send email to think@kera.org. If you would like to have a copy of this book, and I think anybody who loves the State Fair really needs to have this on their shelves as a reference and a sort of historical record of how we got to where we are today, we have this available at the $120 contribution level when you go online to kera.org or when you call 1-888-694-6931. Jeff Whittington is back now. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Chris. And, of course, the book is, I mean, it's fascinating. The photos are unbelievable and the stories are great. You can get this, at your favorite online or brick-and-mortar retailer as well. But, you know, we will do the shopping for you, so to speak, if you'll call 888-694-6931 and ask for your copy of the book. Or go online to kera.org. You can see the book cover there. It's available at the $120 membership level. And it's really crucial that we hear from you at any level this hour, because we're working on this challenge from Urban Integration. It's a challenge grant of $1,500. We must generate 100 contributions total during the show today in order to be able to accept this $1,500 additional gift.
We've got a lot of progress to make. We have 73 to go. That is certainly possible if you pick up the phone right now. If you were thinking at some point during the drive you were going to make a contribution, we would ask you sincerely and humbly to please call now to 1-888-694-6931. Also counts if you make a donation in any amount online at kera.org, so you can take care of it there as well.
I do want to thank Paul Sampson and Terrell, Barbara Lux in Fort Worth, Anastasia Jax in Dallas, Michael Maxwell in Plano, Simon Cooper in Plano, Leela Grothy in Dallas. Hey, Leela. Randy Tadlock in Greenville. Thanks to each of you. Also, I want to thank Kelly Vickers in Dallas, Terry Tarzi in Plano, and Margaret Seeley from Dallas. Thanks so much to each of you. We're that much closer thanks to your calls to 888-694-6931 or your online contributions at kera.org.
We talked in the last hour about sharing information about yourself. Please, we would ask, if you are a social networker and you've made your contribution, let your friends know, because you can be a great influence on them as well. If they're people who also love KERA as much as you do, you can help us out by encouraging them to make a contribution in any amount at kera.org or on the phone at 1-888-694-6931.
I haven't even mentioned the new book, Chris. NPR's All Cakes Considered by Melissa Gray at the $100 membership level. You can see the cover of this book online as well. It's a year's worth of weekly recipes tasted and approved, of course, by the staff of NPR's All Things Considered. So it's available when you join the station at the $100 level. It's called All Cakes Considered. But join at any level right now. We've really got to achieve this challenge. We've got to hear from 73 more of you at some level. At 888-694-6931 or online at kera.org by 2 o'clock.
This is programming that you love, that you count on, that you make an appointment to listen to on a regular basis. We're able to bring it to you because of contributions from people who listen, people who say, I never miss Think. We're talking to you because we want to be able to continue this show strong for you here on KERA. Please go online to kera.org or call 1-888-694-6931.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's continuing and professional education. Hundreds of personal and professional development courses start this fall. Details online at smu.edu/CAPE.
Yeah. You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Assistant Director of the Dallas Parks and Recreation Department, Willis Winters. His new book is called Fair Park. Preservation Dallas and the Dallas Center for Architecture will host Willis for a book signing of Fair Park tonight at 6 at the Wilson Carriage House in Dallas. Also on Saturday the 25th at the Main Street Garden Park, there will be a day in the park honoring the book, and we hope that you check it out. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can call us at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. So aside from the eyewash, was George Dahl given free rein to decide what sort of buildings would be designed for the permanent exhibition?
He was, Chris. He was, as the centennial architect, totally in charge of the look of Fair Park and the transformation of this, 80-acre site, which contained a series of miscellaneous, unrelated exhibit buildings, racetracks, livestock coliseums, all done in different styles.
Because they've been built over time.
Over a long period of time, exactly. So he was in charge of transforming them into this single spectacular vision for a World's Fair in Dallas in 1936.
And everybody agreed that art should be a big part of this.
It was, maybe more than any other fair up to that time. Dahl made the decision to incorporate public art, monumental public art, into the architecture and display of the fair. So he brought in a team of artists. Dahl was himself a Prix de Rome winner that went to Rome in the 20s to study. His chief architect, Donald Nelson, also had studied in Rome. So between the two of them, they had connections with a series of European artists and American artists. Donald Nelson also previously worked at the Chicago Century of Progress Exposition in 1933, 3 years prior, where he had met additional artists. So between the two of them, they brought artists, mural painters, colorists, sculptors to Dallas, assembled an incredible team of national, international artists that commingled with a rather strong local team of artists, some of whom comprised this group called the Dallas Nine. And I think it was a very synergetic gathering of artists that occurred in Dallas in 35 and 36.
And I had never known that at the time, the oil murals that were done were the largest in the world.
That's what we have uncovered in my research, that Eugene Savage, who was the dean of the Yale School of Art, Yale University, was brought to Dallas by Dahl and executed these two oil murals in the Great Hall of the building that we now call the Hall of State. Originally, that building was the State of Texas building and the centerpiece of the Centennial Exposition. So he executed these two murals, which sort of depicted Texas history from 1519, first Spanish explorers in the state, up to 1936. And they were and are quite spectacular.
You know, there's so much going on when the fair itself is in session that it's almost easy to pass by all the spectacular art without really noticing it. Is there a best time of year, do you think, to go and make a trip specifically to see the murals and the sculptures?
Well, I've talked to so many people that say that same thing. The answer, simple answer, is anytime when the state fair is not going on, because it's all of the extra stuff is sort of peeled away and you can see the buildings. It's really hard to take note of the buildings, the architecture, and much less the art during the state fair, because there's so much to capture your attention. So just go make a trip to Fair Park during a non-fair time, and you'll see the art.
Tell me about the Texas Woofus.
It was executed by a sculptor named Lawrence Tenney Stevens, who did several other pieces at Fair Park for the Centennial, the tenor and contralto sculptures, which have recently been recreated and reinstalled on the Esplanade Fountain. He did those three, and then, as I mentioned to you before, Stevens went on to become the director of sculpture for the New York World's Fair in 1939. So the Woofus sets in the center of the agricultural zone or district, what we call the agrarian district. And it's important to note that this was the first dedicated district for agriculture and livestock at any World's Fair up to that time, right here in Dallas. There are several firsts for the Centennial the first agricultural district, the first air-conditioned World's Fair, too, which was very important because the summer of 1936 was one of the hottest on records. One day in August, it reached 109 degrees. We all know what that's like. Anyway, so the Wolf is sat at the center adjacent to one of the livestock barns, which we now call the Swine Building. And it was composed of the body parts, basically, of six different Texas farm animals. It had, you know, the body or torso of a hog, the neck of a ram, longhorns, turkey feathers, chicken wings, etc. And then after the fair, after the centennial in there was a second follow-up fair in 1937 called the Greater Texas and Pan American Exposition. After that fair, several of the sculptures mysteriously disappeared, including the Wolfus, the Texas Wolfus. My conjecture, there's no documentation on it. My conjecture is it was looked upon as a pagan idol in a very conservative city, uh-huh. You know, back in the mid-30s, and it was probably dragged out into a pasture and buried somewhere. If anyone knows anything about this mystery, I'd love to talk to them. Because we've never turned it up. So the Friends of Fair Park worked to raise money through a series of Texas Wolfus dinners over a long period of years, and raised enough money and had it recast and recreated, so it's now been reinstalled successfully.
It's funny to imagine 10,000 years from now, some archaeologists uncovering this somewhere and thinking, trying to make sense of what it's doing there.
This is pagan religion and idolaters in Dallas in 1936.
When we think about an open car presidential motorcade going through the streets of downtown Dallas, obviously Kennedy comes to mind. But in fact, in 1936, FDR came through.
That's right. I'm so glad you brought that up because there were two parades, two motorcades in Dallas connected with the centennial. The first one was the opening of the centennial, in which there were 250,000 people lining the streets, Main Street, and then out to Fair Park. It was the largest assembly of the public ever in the Southwest up to that time. 250,000 people. Population of Dallas was 300,000. So just think about that for a moment. Then a week later, President Franklin Roosevelt comes to town to officially dedicate the centennial. He draws 500,000 people.
So it's everyone from who's mining the store at that point?
Exactly. Where do these people come from? They must have driven for hundreds of miles for this spectacular event. And just to think of that, I don't think there's ever been 500,000 people gathered together in Dallas since that time for any event. So that must have been an extraordinary situation in the history of our city.
Was the Midway always a big factor in the fair?
The Midway has gone through a significant number of transformations over the years, but it's very different from what it is today, which is we all think of the rides that are brought in for the state fair, but it wasn't always like that. There were rides like the great Shoot the Chute, which was a gigantic water slide in a boat, and then there was a long roller coaster ride. But those were the two major rides, and then there weren't the minor rides or that we think of today. They were mostly entertainment attractions in the Midway. Then during the centennial, almost all of the rides were taken away except for the roller coaster, and it was a series of entertainment venues like the Streets of Paris, 1,600-seat outdoor venue with entertainment day and night, and outdoor restaurants like at the Black Forest, the Streets of All Nations, Midget City.
That was a restaurant?
Yeah.
Or that was
it was an attraction, an entertainment attraction. And then, Ripley's Believe It or Not had a show at Fair Park at the Centennial. Admiral Byrd's Antarctic Expedition.
Yeah, now talk about how that ended up in Dallas, Texas.
Well, Byrd, of course, was the explorer of the South Pole. And his brother and his cousin, I think, lived in Dallas, Richard Byrd, and created a traveling attraction out of his expedition and included artifacts, sleds, the biplane, et cetera, that were used by the Admiral to explore the South Pole. And he put together a major traveling show that made the circuit of World's Fairs during the 1930s. I think it first appeared at Chicago in 1933, then was brought to Dallas in 1936, and was very popular.
And it was quite, it wasn't just a building, there was a whole set created.
Right, and that's what most of these attractions and entertainment venues were. They were set pieces, essentially. And that's where the world comes from in the term World's Fair. There weren't the foreign exhibits in Dallas like we think of today, and at most of the World's Fairs in the 30s, but there were, you know, instead the streets of Paris and the Black Forest from Germany. There were entertainment attractions that included restaurants and gift shops that sold products and memorabilia from the home countries. So that's sort of, but anyway, back to the Admiral Byrd exhibit, it was like a recreation, a set piece of the South Pole, basically, with its mountains of snow executed in gunite, you know, over a steel frame.
And there was a recreation of the Globe Theater?
Yes, and what's really interesting on that, it was an exact replica of the Globe Theater, which sits in the used to be located in the parking lot next to the Fair Park Music Hall. And the most interesting thing about that is that Orson Welles directed all of the Shakespearean shows in repertory. Orson Welles was in Dallas in the summer of 1936 directing Shakespeare.
Wow. Willis Winters is my guest. He's assistant director of the Dallas Parks and Recreation Department and author of the new book, Fair Park. We'll tell you how to get your copy of Fair Park in just a moment. There is an event sponsored at 6 p.m. tonight by Preservation Dallas and the Dallas Center for Architecture. That's a book signing event. Willis Winters will be there. It's at the Wilson Carriage House in Dallas. You can learn more about that at dallascfa.com. Also on Saturday the 25th at the Main Street Garden Park, there will be a Day in the Park event, so you might want to turn out for that. Jeff Whittington is here now. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Chris. And this is your public radio station. It is your show right here, produced in the flesh in Dallas, Fort Worth, for you, the public radio listener here. So why not support it? 888-694-6931 is the number to call. Of course, you can go online to kera.org and make your contribution there. We do have a goal of 100 contributions by 2 o'clock. We've made some headway. We're still looking for 65 contributions at any level. And this is eminently doable, folks. I mean, I know that in the next 25 minutes, I mean, we know how many of you, give or take a few, are listening to the show every day. It seems like it would be easy to achieve this if you would just go online to KERA.org, or if you would just call 1-888-694-6931.
You know, we suggest levels to you, and we have levels that are attached to thank you gifts. Like at the $120 level, you can receive a copy of Fair Park. That's Willis Winters' new book. But any level works. You know, if you can do, you know, $1,000, we would love to hear from you. If $10 works for you at the moment, we'll take it, and we're very grateful to receive it. One thing that a lot of people do to make a significant contribution really affordable within their budget is to sign up for the Sustaining Membership Plan, which basically takes whatever amount you decide every month from your checking account and drops it into our membership account.
Yeah, it divides your annual contribution by 12, which is easy when it's $240. It's just $20. It's pretty easy when it's $360. That's, what is that? That'd be
$30.
$30 a month. So, you know, do the math or get your calculator and decide what's right for you each month, and then call 888-694-6931 or go online to kera.org. It's really easy to sign up for, and then your membership is always current. Of course, many, many, many of you, 90-plus, 95, 96, even 98% of you, choose to just use your credit card or debit card. And that's great, too, because we don't have to send you out a reminder with an envelope to send a check back. The money goes to work right away for your favorite radio station. And, you know, it's taken care of. And we do Visa, MasterCard, American Express, Discover. But you can get Willis Winters' book either way. Fair Park, it's yours when you join the station today at the $120 membership level. However you want to pay for it is fine with us.
I want to make sure and say thanks to all of you who have been contributing over the 2 hours of Think Today. I want to thank Valerie Baston in Grand Prairie, Sharon Heron in Dallas, Catherine LeBlanc in Dallas, and let's see, we have Jan Doherty in Dallas.
Hey, Jan, thanks so much.
And thanks to Sandy King in Azle and Emily Capehart in Denton and Sandra Dennehy in Fort Worth.
Jan is a longtime volunteer here at the station.
Absolutely.
So thanks to everybody who has, thanks to everybody who's volunteered. Thanks to everybody who's called. Thanks to everybody who's contributed online. You are the reason the station continues to be able to bring you the programming that you rely on. I mean, it's a full circle kind of thing. The national program fees are in the ballpark of $1 million plus a year for us to be able to air Morning Edition, Fresh Air, The Diane Rehm Show, et cetera, all those shows. Certainly doesn't cost $1 million plus a year to produce and air the Think Radio show, but everything we do here has the same costs that any business or household has, and those have to be met somehow. This year, the numbers add up to you contributing almost 60% of the budget for KERA. That's what your share is this year. So do your part at whatever level is right for you, but please do your part right now, 888-694-6931 or online at kera.org.
Still working on this challenge grant. We would beseech you, if you expect that at some point during this fundraising campaign you will make a contribution, please do it now. Urban Integration has given us this challenge grant, $1,500 if we can generate 100 contributions during Think Today in support of the station. We have 62 to go. We can, as Jeff said, we can definitely get through that. There's plenty of phone lines. There's unlimited capacity online if you want to make your contribution that way at kera.org. The phone number to call is 1-888-694-6931.
1-888-694-6931 or go online to kera.org. The toll-free call does have a cost for the station. So if you can make your contribution online at kera.org, that's even better because you can take care of it. You can fill out all the information, double-check it, make sure you got it right. And it's really easy to do. It takes about 90 seconds for you to become a member of the station, and I would really ask that you do it now while you're listening, while you're thinking about it. Do it now because you may not be listening later today, and we all have the best of intentions. But really, this is the moment right now to go online to kera.org or to call 888-694-6931.
You are the reason public radio is here, the reason KERA is here. We are here to serve you, and we rely on your financial support to provide the programming that you count on. You would be shocked if we were gone tomorrow. We're not going to be gone tomorrow. But the reason that we've been able to stay here and serve you for all these years is because people have come before you and made contributions to this station. We would ask that you help us out now with this challenge grant we have from Urban Integration, $1,500 at risk to KERA. Please go online to kera.org or call us at 1-888-694-6931. Thanks.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's continuing and professional education. Hundreds of personal and professional development courses start this fall. Details online at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Willis Winters. He is Assistant Director of the Dallas Parks and Recreation Department and Director of the ongoing Fair Park Revitalization Project. His new book that we're talking about this hour is called Fair Park. There is a book signing event for that tonight at 6 o'clock at the Wilson Carriage House in Dallas that's sponsored by Preservation Dallas and the Dallas Center for Architecture. If you want to be part of the conversation, call us now at 1-800-933-5372. Or send email to think@kera.org. I want to talk about what it takes to collect the images. This book, if it's not obvious to people already, it is packed with photographs, which are so much fun. Talk about what it takes to find photographs that work. Do you actually use people's snapshots occasionally, or are the official pictures better for what you're trying to do?
Well, a little bit of both, Chris. There's a number of really good photographic archives in Dallas, first of all, to start with. State Fair has a great archives. The Hall of State, Dallas Historical Society has a great archives. The Dallas Central Library, 7th floor, Texas Dallas History Collection, Carol Rourke, great archives there. And in the Municipal Archives in Dallas City Hall that's administered by John Slate is a great source. And then we also have been building up a collection of images in the Park Department over the years. Then I've also, just as a, you know, been buying images myself that I have a collection of. So we were able to get most of them from 99% of the images came from those sources.
One thing I always love when you look at an old photograph of a place that still exists is when you see a skinny little tree that you think might actually still be there.
Yep.
Have you been able to trace any locations and look and see how much these things have grown?
The trees are not so much. There are a few trees that probably at Fair Park that date from the centennial, and we can see those in the photographs. But like the ones that might, for example, be the stand of trees between the Perry Avenue entrance where the DART station is and the Esplanade Fountain, those are fairly large live oaks that were probably planted during the centennial. And in fact, you can see even on the view on the cover of the book, you can see some of those skinny little trees that have now grown up, you know, are now 65, 70 years old.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
Yeah.
We have an email here from Edith who writes, "My late husband had an unused ticket to the 1936 centennial at the State Fair of Texas. Is there any value or importance to such a neat keepsake?"
Oh, sure. Absolutely. Yeah. In fact, I think I have a ticket stub in the book. But, you know, I don't know what that would be worth on eBay today. $15, $20, something like that. But definitely keep that as a souvenir of one of the great events that ever happened in Dallas.
Was there any controversy to spending all that money for the centennial?
Not that I've ever been able to uncover.
Really?
I think it was a no-brainer.
Mm-hmm.
And the Dallas, you know, was blessed in competing with cities like Houston and San Antonio, Austin, Fort Worth. Dallas was not even established or founded by, you know, John Neely Bryan until 6 years after the War for Independence from Mexico. So we really didn't have any historical credentials whatsoever to stage the centennial exposition here. But we had the physical plant of the State Fair with a vast array of exhibition buildings, agricultural facilities, the racetrack, and Dallas floated a bond program of about $8 million to build the cultural facilities, all the museums that are currently located around the lagoon. Those were all built. That was Dallas's contribution to the centennial, basically giving our city its first cultural district, predating the arts district by, you know, 5 decades almost.
Yeah, the first iteration of what is now the Dallas Museum of Art was in Fair Park.
That's right.
Right.
And, of course, the Dallas Museum of Natural History, the Dallas Horticulture Center is now the Texas Discovery Garden. So all of those facilities were originated at Fair Park. The Dallas Symphony Orchestra played some of its earliest performances in the old Livestock Coliseum, which is now the Women's Museum.
So there were some years between 1936 and, I guess, the early 90s when Fair Park fell into a state of disrepair in many places. At what point did people realize we have got to take care of this?
I think by the late 1980s, people were beginning to see the impact of years and years of decades, not just years, decades of deferred maintenance.
Mm-hmm.
The buildings were structurally, some of them unstable. The roofs leaked. The plaster was cracking and peeling. The layers of paint over the murals was peeling. And I think Fair Park just didn't look very good in the mid-1980s. So the Park Department took back maintenance and maintenance responsibility, operations responsibility from the State Fair. And by the early 90s, there was the Friends of Fair Park was founded to promote the cause of Fair Park. There was a half-cent sales tax resolution, which failed in the early 90s. And I think that was the benchmark that we look back to now as the single most important event that caused a turnaround at Fair Park. When that sales tax referendum failed, people knew that, and supporters, Fair Park supporters knew that something drastic had to happen. The Friends of Fair Park was founded, and the city began to take a more active role through its bond referendums in securing funding for Fair Park. A master plan was completed. And I think we all just look back now as to the early 1990s as sort of the benchmark that has moved Fair Park forward. Since 93, the City of Dallas, the Park Department, and all of our private partners, including the State Fair, have invested $265 million in the restoration of Fair Park and in building new facilities.
What remains to be done?
It's never ending.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, I didn't think we would ever get to this point where we are today, where we could look at projects that were not, you know, essential buildings, so to speak, like restoring or reconstructing the Esplanade Fountain and restoring the mural. So most of the buildings are in very good shape. The roofs have been replaced. The electrical systems have been upgraded. They pretty much almost all, with the exception of maybe three or four buildings, have been totally renovated or restored. So compared to what it was in the early 1990s, Fair Park is in good condition.
First football stadium went up in 1921. Was it always called the Cotton Bowl?
That stadium was just called Fair Park Stadium. It seated 15,000 seats, minuscule by today's mm-hmm. high school standards, even in Texas. But a number of early important college football games were played there. It's the first game between a college from the Southwest and a college from the Northeast was played at that football stadium. Then Fair Park Stadium was built in 1930. In the very center of the park where the original 1886 racetrack was.
Oh.
That caused that racetrack to be rebuilt in 1934 in the far outfield where today's parking lot is. That in turn supplanted a state fish hatchery, which moved to White Rock Lake. So I love all these dominoes that happened throughout Dallas from Fair Park. The Fair Park Stadium was built in 1930, original embankment, a bowl set within an embankment, an earthen embankment that seated 46,000. It was the largest stadium in the South when it was finished in 1930. Then it was renamed the Cotton Bowl in 1937, the year after the centennial. And then in 1948, 1949, the upper decks were added on the west side, and then on the east side, increasing the capacity to around 75,000, 76,000. So in the 40s and 50s, that's when SMU was playing there, and it was called the stadium that Doak built after Doak Walker. Right. So, and then in 1960, it was the first place that had two professional football teams mm-hmm. playing in the same stadium. Two expansion clubs, the Dallas Cowboys and the Dallas Texans, later the Kansas City Chiefs, played in the Cotton Bowl. Another benchmark, 1994, World Cup Soccer. And then 2 years ago, we expanded the stadium to keep the Texas and Oklahoma University football classic during the state fair. We expanded the capacity to 92,000. So that's sort of a quick history of the Cotton Bowl.
Are you going to get in line for fried beer this year?
You know, when you read the descriptions of it, and it really does sound kind of enticing, and the fried Frito pie also mm-hmm. sounds enticing. However, I was a little disconcerted to read the calorie and fat content in today's morning news of all the fried. So we'll have to be very selective.
I'm going to have to skip that article so I can have a good time when I go.
Yes.
Well, Willis, it's always a pleasure to have you. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
The new book by Willis Winters is called Fair Park. If you would like to receive a copy of it and support KERA at the same time, you can go online right now to kera.org, or you can call 1-888-694-6931. Either way you do it, make a $120 contribution or more. And let us know that this is what you would like to receive as your thank you gift. I think so many of you are like our family, and you would not miss the fair. You go every year. It's really fun able to know. I know. Jeff, you get like a season pass, don't you?
Well, I just, you know, I can't stay away. I cannot stay away. So, but it is fantastic.
It's fun to know the history. It really is.
Yeah, and when this landed on my desk and I saw Willis was the author, and I thought the fair started, oh my gosh, it's like,
can't miss.
It rung so many bells, or rang, I guess I should say, so many bells, don't email, rang so many bells for me and for the show and for you, because I knew that you would get something out of this conversation. Well, what's that worth to you? To know that there's going to be a show on that you're going to get something out of, if you enjoyed the show today in the conversation, it is so crucial that we hear from you right now. We have this challenge grant on the table, and the time is seriously running out.
We just got an update, and we have 50 contributions left to go in about the next 6 or 7 minutes. You can make this possible for us. A contribution in any amount will tick off this number. We need to get down from 50 to zero so that we have received 100 contributions during the 2 hours of Think Today. please, we would ask you, if you expect to make a contribution to this station, please do it now. We hate to walk away from $1,500 offered as a challenge grant by Urban Integration.
Yeah, Urban Integration said, we'll give you $1,500, KERA, if you can garner 100 contributions total during Think Today. On today, on Tuesday the 21st, you got to get 100 contributions at any level. And, you know, we have to essentially refuse that money if we don't hear from 50 more of you. And it just takes a second to go online, just make a $5 or $10 contribution if you're already a contributor, or if you just can't afford to make a contribution at the level, at one of the basic levels. Just do something right now in support of the station that you listen to, that you're listening to right now, at 888-694-6931 or online at KERA.org.
For many of you, you count on the programming you receive from KERA almost as much as you count on having, you know, water and electricity at your house or at your office. This is a source of information flowing to you, and ideas and news and information. Your support makes it possible for this to happen. You're essentially paying the bills for this station to be delivered to you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 52 weeks a year. Your contribution now to KERA.org or to 1-888-694-6931 makes it possible, we hope, for us to accept this challenge grant from Urban Integration. If you want to make a $120 contribution, you can have a copy of Willis Winter's beautiful book, Fair Park. It's fun to have it around and just as a conversation piece on the coffee table.
Yeah, it's really super cool. I mean, the artwork and the architecture, and then, like you were talking about early in the show, the wagon displays from the early days of the fair.
There was a giant cash register that would tell you what the daily attendance was. There's a couple of great pictures of that in there, which is super fun.
Yeah, just really, really cool old school photography and a lot of really brilliant history. And, you know, every time I go to Fair Park, even when the fair is not happening, it's such a great place. And, we're really lucky to have this in Dallas, kind of like public radio.
Well, we have it because people care enough about it to make it possible.
Exactly. So it's really crucial that you care and show that you care enough about KERA to make a contribution right now at 888-694-6931. We're going to miss out on this challenge, Chris. Urban Integration, they're holding a $1,500 check.
I'm not ready to give up yet.
We've got to hear from, it looks like we're not hearing from anyone. So
your call is all we ask of you. That's the great thing. We may need, you know, 100 contributions in these 2 hours. Your one contribution is what we're trying to get at this moment. We're speaking directly to you who are listening right now, who love Think, who love KERA, who love the ideals of public radio. A contribution in any amount will help us to accept this challenge grant from Urban Integration. And we're not kidding, by the way, when we say we don't get the money unless we fulfill the requirements. It's not like everyone says, oh, it's okay. If we don't all get
a trophy.
No, exactly. It's not like preschool soccer. So please make a contribution now, and you can consider yourself. Say you give us $50. Think about, you helped us get $1,550.
Exactly. It really does help a lot to be able to meet these challenges. Because, you know, we want to wrap the drive up as soon as possible, and that just, it's all about raising money time right here. So please follow the lead of Franz Koller and Sandy Shores, Lauren Hatchell in Dallas, Renee Scott in Pilot Point. We heard from each of them. How about you? 888-694-6931. There's still time left for you to go online to KERA.org and make a contribution. Help us meet this challenge.
Thanks to Kelly Archambault and Tiffany Twu and Sherry Gambow in Dallas. Your contributions are making a difference. If you pick up the phone now, you might be the person that puts us over the top. We're looking for updates on where we are numbers-wise. I know we've got several to go, but it's very possible we can make this if all of you listening pick up the phone now or go online to KERA.org.
Yeah, follow the lead of Bob Bullis in Bedford, Richard Shearer in Dallas, and Bree Sheffield in Coppell. Thanks to each of you. Call us, 888-694-6931. Go online to KERA.org. Still need 44 contributions to make the goal. If you go ahead and get online or get on the phone right now, I think that we can probably count your contribution toward this challenge grant.
If you initiate the process.
Yes, please initiate the process.
While we're talking.
Immediately at KERA.org or via the phone system at 1-888-694-6931.
That sounded so robot-y.
It was very Star Trek. You know, engage.
1-888-694-6931 or online at KERA.org. KERA.org. We can't stress enough that the money, the $1,500 from Urban Integration, is in fact at risk. However, a contribution from you in any amount counts toward your support of your source for NPR News, 90.1 KERA, Dallas, Fort Worth, Denton, and online at KERA.org.
Please call 888-694-6931. Go online to KERA.org. Pick out a thank you gift, pick out a way to pay, pick out a level, and help support the station you've already chosen to listen to all the time, KERA. Again, it's KERA.org or 888-694-6931.
Lots of thank you gifts you can choose when you go online or when you make that phone call. The phone number, 1-888-694-6931. Fastest and often easiest way to do this is online at KERA.org. We appreciate your help with this.
The Think production team includes associate producer Betsy Lewis and engineer Nilofer Arsala. Our senior producer is Jeff Whittington. Learn more about today's show, find out about upcoming programs, and download our free daily podcasts at kera.org/think. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@kera.org.